Welcome to another edition of the Big Pod Machine, the best baseball podcast in all of the major leagues, and according to my colleague Pat Brennan, in all of the world, really. So with all that, here's Pat Brennan, myself, Gordon Wittenmeyer. We got Phil Didion, our esteemed producer behind the scenes, and this Nimrod over here, Tommy Thrall in the background for comic relief.
Boy, he's a good sport. It sounds like I've heard reports from the scene, Gordon, that you invaded Tommy's broadcast booth.
Yeah, maybe a little bit.
All right.
He's being a very, very nice host here.
All right, good.
He deserved that little shot because he's been giving me some shots around here since we got to town. Before we get started, Pat, let's just give the update that we have on what people might have seen and cringed at Monday night in the opener of this series. We're in Atlanta right now. The Reds dropped the opener 4-0, and the story of that game really was what happened in left field in the third inning with Tyler Callahan, the rookie. Matt Olson slices a ball toward the corner, and on a dead run, Callahan gloves it about two steps before he crashed full speed into the wall in foul territory, glove first. He suffered at least two fractures in that forearm, and they sent him back to Cincinnati for surgery to get that thing set. He's going to be out. I mean, they're going to measure this in months.
Yeah.
Really, do yourself, if you haven't seen this, don't go look at it. It's not worth watching. Just know that he's better now. He was said to be in good spirits by the time he got examined, diagnosed, and splinted last night. They've called up Jacob Hurtubise to take his spot on the hitting side of the roster, and they made a pitching move too, calling up Lyon Richardson and sending down Yasmer Zulueta. So a little bit of bullpen moves, but Hurtubise is the big one replacing Callahan for now. So that's what we got there. They got the Cy Young winner going against them, Chris Sale, on Tuesday night in game two of that series. I tell you what, man, coming out of Colorado and a good and long road trip, I thought they'd be in better position right now.
Yeah.
And this team is not looking great for all the pitching they're getting.
Yeah. You know, I think I saw this team slide back in terms of results during the 7-game homestand, Gordon. And I think you can put some of it down to underperformance. I think the rain really wreaked havoc on the way the Reds had to line up their pitching during the 4-game Cardinals series.
Is that a mulligan homestand?
I mean, you can't write any of these off, right? But I think my takeaway from the Cardinals series was that you were fortunate to get out of that with a split of the 4 games, just because Tuesday rainout leads into a Wednesday doubleheader where you had Chase Petty on the mound making his MLB debut, basically there to, you know, I heard some people describe it as eat a start to help keep the rest of the pitching staff kind of in line and on schedule. And you didn't know what you were going to get there. It could have been great, like we saw from Chase in spring training against the LA Dodgers, the world-beating LA Dodgers of all teams. It didn't go that way. He got hit very hard by the Cardinals. So they dropped that game. And then, I think you're fortunate to scramble to get a split with the Cardinals. And then, you drop 2 out of 3 after taking the opener against the Washington Nationals, which is an improved Nationals team and an athletic Nationals team.
Yeah, we heard that coming out of spring training, that don't sleep on these guys.
Yeah, so they're a couple games below 500 right now, but they looked like a better team than that against the Reds anyway. And the series ended, perhaps fittingly, in rainy conditions at GABP. and the Reds amassed five hits, and that was it. They lost four out of seven on the homestand. They dropped back to one game over 500, and now they're 500 going into this series against. Yeah. It felt like the home. It felt like the homestand against those two teams was a spot where you and I agreed from previous episodes. This is still a soft portion of the schedule. I thought we were going to take see them
Stop.
Take
a. This is a mud bog. Jesus, man. They played four teams that are currently in last place, and they're 9-3 against them. So what does that say about the rest of the record? And they haven't played the Dodgers yet, the Padres yet, the Diamondbacks yet, the Phillies yet. Now they get the Braves, who are back up to speed after a slow start. And what's the first thing they do? They shut them out.
Yeah.
So where are you getting your wins?
I mean, you know, these are weird things, though. I really think, you know, the rain played a factor in Chase Petty getting that one start and basically the Reds being non-competitive in the entire game. And last night, you know, the Monday game against the Braves was a weird one because of that play with Tyler Callahan, right? Would you agree with this that, you know, and then there was some controversy.
Yeah, but
although,
here's the... Yeah, well, two runs scored. Go ahead.
The Matt Olson two-run inside the park home run. There was some debate about whether or not that was legal and fair, and I don't think anyone should begrudge him for running out that play. If the roles were reversed, you would want to see the Reds player running out that play.
He'd be getting ripped if he didn't run that play.
Yeah, if he'd held up a second.
He didn't exactly sprint.
Yeah, yeah.
He just realized what was going on and finished the play.
Yeah.
It's what you do. You're a professional.
Absolutely.
But, you know, as far as that being a weird game and that casting a pall over the rest of the game, it certainly did. But it was already 4-0 at that point. And that guy, Smith Shaver, that was going for the Braves last night, he friggin' no-hit him into the eighth.
Yeah.
And, you know, he had that stuff before that play. So, I only go so far with that being an impact on the rest of the game. I mean, they're down by four runs at that point anyway. And by the way, they didn't allow the Braves to score again. So, I mean, how much did the game, you know, quote, get away from them because they were impacted by that?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. I just I'm a little wary of, getting too, as Lou Piniella used to say, getting too giggly about this ball club right now. Hey, here's the thing, Pat, you know, all that stuff that we just said about the schedule, they're actually catching the ball better than they did last year. They're not setting the world on fire and on the way to a bunch of gold gloves or anything, but they're playing better baseball than they did last year. Their pitching is, you know, Hunter Green's pitching even better than he did at this point last year. They're getting as much out of the rotation as they did last year at this point. The bullpen's hanging in there for being kind of a shaky position area. They just don't have the bats to get this done. They don't have enough on a given day. I mean, they're plus 30 in run differential, but shit, 18 of that was one game in Baltimore, you know? So yeah, I don't know what to make of these guys yet. I tell you what though, the rest of this road trip, and certainly as we start seeing some teams we think are contenders after this, is going to start saying something about these guys. And, you know, you just hope for their sake it doesn't go the wrong direction real fast. Well, kind of like it did last May.
Yeah. And I think I agree with what you said. It just feels a little more tenuous at this moment than I thought it would. I think I think you saw the immediate impact of Austin Hayes' injury. Right now, he's on the 10-day IL. That has happened since we last recorded. And they think it'll be a quick turnaround. Gordon, I think if everything goes to plan, you'll probably see Austin come back and play on this road trip. But
we actually, Tito Francona yesterday said that, and he's not usually one to make projections.
No,
days.
He's not.
Now,
he's
said not. It looks like Friday might be a go for him. That's his first eligible day. So they're kind of looking at, I think they're counting on that. Put it that way.
Yeah, I'd say.
And I think that's a great point. How much better did they play when he was in? You realize he's like top 3, I believe, maybe top 2 on this team in WAR, and he's played less than half the games.
Yeah, yeah, it's unbelievable. And, you know, that feels like a tenuous proposition too, because he came in with the history of injuries, and I'll separate the kidney infection last year from that, because that was kind of a different situation. But he had a history of nagging injuries, and as good as he's been for this Reds team, and when he's out there, you feel really good about the length of this lineup and all that stuff. And maybe even more so if you can ever get him and Tyler Stevenson in the same lineup. But can you rely on him? Can you rely on him to be there when it matters down the stretch of this season? You know, it's concerning to me.
The good news for them, right, is he's not a long-term contract, right? This is a one-year proposition. You just get him on the field as many games you can this year.
Yeah, but, I mean, if one of the themes of the season is urgency, as you and I agree, you've said that, and I agree with you, you know, this guy being a key player, and you worry from game to game, week to week, what's his availability going to be? That's a tough way to, you know, that's a tough way to go through the big 162.
Yeah, no doubt about
it. If so much is falling to him.
Yeah. But if he does come back Friday and he hits the ground running again, and maybe not too fast so he doesn't pull another hamstring or groin or calf or whatever the hell he's got going, and Stevenson stays healthy and he's in there, and you can find a way to keep Trevino's bat in there because he's hit 300 this year, maybe they start stealing some of these series against some of these better teams, because we know they've got competitive pitching. So, I tell you, it really makes the next probably couple of weeks worth watching for sure.
Yeah.
Hey, by the way, we mentioned on the podcast last week that your dumbass hadn't seen Bull Durham until like last week or week before or something like that. And how that happens, how a baseball writer hadn't seen Bull Durham, I don't know. But we'll come back to that.
Yeah.
Because you've seen it now, and you've got a review for us, right?
I do.
And so maybe we get an idea how it holds up, too. It's greatest.
Sure.
It's greatest movie in American cinematic history, by the way, for anybody who hasn't seen it. Go out and see the damn movie, because
I hadn't heard all that. I hadn't heard that.
Man, it's got everything that makes a movie great. It's got baseball, it's got scotch, it's got sex. What else is there? It's everything that a great movie has.
So, it has all those components. You're absolutely right. Yes.
That's my thumbnail review.
But okay.
We'll get back to that in a minute. I wanted to ask you something because of where we are here. We're in Atlanta, right? And by the time they're done playing a 4-game series here, the Reds might not want to come back here. They might not want any part of this place, except for this in July. Bless you, Tommy Thrall.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Very kind.
Bless you, Tommy.
Unless they come back for the All-Star game.
Yeah.
The All-Star game's here in July. So I'm going to tease this in addition to your review coming up. I've got a story that's going to drop Tuesday night, Wednesday morning, where I look ahead at the early going. Some guys that have put themselves in position if this team performs well and they continue to perform well for All-Star consideration. I'd like to hear from you what you think, having seen at least as many games as I have firsthand since the season started. Who's your top couple of guys, 3 guys maybe, that you think have put themselves in that position? Maybe even a dark horse or 2.
Yeah, sure. Ooh, dark horses. Well,
it seems like there's one that's kind of obvious, right? Is there one that's obvious to both of us?
I think, and we're talking about Hunter Green, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So
we're
like Hunter Green.
Straight.
I mean, look, I don't know how many people saw this coming, but Emilio Pagan has looked awful good coming out of the bullpen, and in a variety of situations. Usually, saves.
Glory for me.
Yeah. I don't want to give it all away. So
that's a good call.
There's 2 from you. How about you? Any dark horse candidates you're thinking about?
Well, yeah. So, but the thing about Pagan, right? I mean, early in his career, he was a closer for a while. I think his career high is 20 saves.
Yeah.
You got 8 out of 9 as we talk now with a 230 something ERA. I mean, that's pretty good. Those are all-star numbers. He's not one of the usual suspects, though. He's never made an all-star game. So, you know, he's probably it's going to be a little bit of an uphill climb for him probably, but I don't know how, you know, if he keeps doing it and if they get on a little bit of a run here and he has, you know, if he stacks up a bunch of saves all of a sudden over a 2-3 week period, he could put himself in that place. I think that's a great call on your part. I tell you what, I got two. We also think like speaking of usual suspects, Ellie De La Cruz, he's going to get a lot of attention. Fans love him so much.
Yeah.
That SOB might get voted in, even if somebody else like Trey Turner or whomever has better numbers. I think Trey was a starter last year at shortstop. But fans love this guy, and he's going to have a chance to get voted in, which is
–
I also think if you look at some of his peripheral numbers, he's got a chance to go on a run here too and take some good numbers and spike them as we get into voting. But I've got a couple of dark horses for you. What about Gavin Lux? Now, he hasn't looked great the last, I don't know, week. But first month of the season, he had the best first month of his life.
Yeah.
Really comfortable here. And if he were to sort of rebound from this down week that he's had and get back on another roll, that could be an interesting call. He could wind up having the numbers for it. He'd probably have to, you know, he's probably looking at a backup, right? I don't know what position it would even be. I think they've got a utility position now. So, but he could be a guy. And I'll tell you what, one that seems like a non-starter, literally, Jose Trevino.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
This guy was the most consistent hitter on the club for the first month.
Yep.
And if they find a way to keep him in the lineup and he continues to hit, between that and how he's handled pitchers, I don't know, man. You'd have to consider him, wouldn't you?
I would think so, absolutely. And that might be made a little more difficult for him with Tyler Stevenson back in the picture. And it seems like, you know, Tyler's been back for 4 games. He's already caught 2 of those. Whereas Trevino was kind of the number one guy while Stevenson was out, as he should have been. But so his opportunities could be lessened, and that could make his path to an all-star game a little more difficult. But man, has he been fun to watch in the early in the early weeks of this season.
And yeah, Tyler could wind up spending some games at DH.
Sure. Yeah.
And basically what we're talking about is another month, maybe a little over a month of significant enough playing time and significant enough performance that he's in that group, that he's caught the lion's share of games, or he's played the lion's share of games and has the at-bats to be considered. Never mind the performance, but
yeah.
Hey, remember, this isn't new territory for him. He's actually made an all-star team in the past.
So, yeah.
Those are my guys.
Yeah.
Who else? At one point I thought Austin Hayes could get on a heater here and then he just gets on the IL again.
Well, so. I think that my ultimate dark horse candidate will be Austin Hayes, and I think his big fight. I predicted, actually, before the season started, that he would join Hunter Green and Ellie De La Cruz in Atlanta for the All-Star game.
I remember
game.
That.
And that started to look pretty good over the last few weeks, I got to say. I think that'll be a battle against his body and his mind as he tries to stay healthy. Man, if he plays like he did when he was available for the one stretch he was available, you'd have to think he'll shoehorn his name into the conversation.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. And, don't sleep on some of these starters who could put together a good month and suddenly get in the conversation. It's interesting. The bottom line for this whole thing, though, Pat, is if they're not playing well, I think they're – if the playoffs were to start tomorrow, they'd be in the 10th position because they're tied with Milwaukee and they would lose a tiebreaker. And 10th out of 15 teams. I mean, if you're hovering in that range, you're not getting more than an all-star or two. So it really doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So, I know this is way early, but the team's got to be playing well, too, for them to start having a chance to get multiple guys. All right.
Yeah.
That, the time that everybody's been waiting for is now upon us. I need to hear your take on Bull Durham after spending the last three decades inexplicably ignoring the greatest movie in American cinematic history.
I got to tell you, so I finally caught pieces of it on TV, but it was interrupted by commercials. But I was enticed enough, mostly by the Annie Savoy character, that I wanted to see, and I loved the Crash Davis character as well. I then saw enough to go and actually buy this film on from the Apple Store. Yes.
Oh, wow.
And I have to tell you, but I mean, I loved it. I don't know if you want me to give it, you know, a Siskel and Ebert rating here, two thumbs or how many stars.
Well, you know where my thumb is.
I loved it. Hey, 10 out of 10. 10 out of 10. Two thumbs up, whatever you want to give it.
How about that?
10 it's out of Bull, 10. Bull Durham struck me, and it is one of the great sports movies in existence. And I believe that because a good sports movie has to have compelling, believable sports action. If I see rinky-dink actors running around trying to recreate a live game situation, regardless of the sport, it's what made Hoosiers one of the great sports movies of all time. The basketball action in the film was flawless in terms of its believability. I thought...
And most of it was slow motion, but yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. Especially when the guy was getting thrown into the trophy case. But the believability of the baseball on the field was there. You had that. But this was, I think, less a movie about baseball and more a story of life, Gordon. It's a story about the fleeting nature of life, the fleeting nature of a professional's lifespan in the game of baseball and how that defines one's existence. Crash Davis, the hard-drinking, hard-living lion in the winter of his baseball career, rearing a young pitcher, only to see that pitcher achieve the final form, ascend to the major leagues, and then see his own career end suddenly and unexpectedly. So there's incredible human interest in this, and that's what makes it a great, great movie. And I'll leave you with this. My favorite quote of the film is in the opening monologue from Annie Savoy. I've tried them all. This is Annie Savoy on religion. I've tried them all. I really have. And the only church that truly feeds the soul day in and day out is the church of baseball. And Gordon, that really resonated with me because I truly love going to the ballpark every day to be part of the traveling circus that is a major league season. You have made that fun for me. And I think there is just so much for people in and around, and maybe in my case, adjacent to the game itself, that is relatable about Bull Durham. And that quote from Annie Savoy, the character Annie Savoy, just summed it all up for me. And from there, the movie took off like a shot. And I loved it. I thank you for encouraging me to watch it. And I've had to reshuffle my rankings of the top five sports movies I've seen in my life.
That was an outstanding review. Recommend seeing it another 15 or 20 times.
I've already watched it 5 times, I promise you. I'm hooked. It's one of those. I'll be quoting it in the press box all this year. I'm sure you'll look forward to that.
Oh, I used to quote it all the time. I drove my friends crazy. I think there's hints of almost Shakespearean tragedy in there too sometimes. I mean, I do think this movie elevates at times. And the character, the Crash Davis character, he does everything right. He's got talent. The idea that he's setting a minor league record for home runs And he, you know, she's impressed, and he says, "Yeah, don't tell anybody."
Yeah,
that's kind of a dubious distinction, you know, because it's all about his 21 days in the show.
Yeah,
that's what it's all about. And when you make it for 21 days or one day, that's what life is all about.
And you know, can I tell you something? And this might be, you know, maybe you can help reel this in a little bit, but you know, I couldn't help but think of Crash, the movie in its totality, as I saw the Tyler Callahan injury last night. Now, I think he'll be fine. We're going to see Tyler Callahan on a major league field again.
I think you're right.
But, you know, just the fleeting nature of a major league career. He had been up for 4 days in the show, and then his reward for running out and gutting out and busting his ass to try to make a great play is, what did you say, 2 fractures in his arm? I mean, that's just the cruelty of that is reflective of the cruelty of the game and life itself. And that again,
life's not being fair.
And that again, I think, is what Crash Davis is, the prevailing message throughout that movie. More than the sex, more than the drinking, and all those scenes are awesome. But that is what the movie is about, and why it is such a good telling of the baseball story of so many people that have lived it, like yourself, like all the players who have played this game, and people who are adjacent to it. And that's what makes it such a special flick.
Hey, Pat, you know what the difference between it and 250 and 300 is? One hit. One hit a week. 25 weeks in a baseball season.
Yeah, they broke that down pretty well.
25 hits and 500 at-bats is 50 points.
Yep.
One more hit a week. One quirk, one dying quail, one ground ball with eyes. One more dying quail, and you're in Yankee Stadium.
What a recitation from the flick, from the script. And you did that. We didn't tee that up. You just pulled that out. That's one of Crash's great speeches in the movie.
That to me sums up the whole movie.
Yeah. Yep.
And with that, my man, I'll see you at the yard, mate.
All right.
We're done for another episode of the Big Pod Machine. As you all are discovering, as you listen to this, the greatest baseball podcast ever.
In the world.
Pat Brennan, our great studio producer Phil Didion, myself Gordon Whitmire, and our special guest Tommy Thrall over here to my left. That's a wrap for this edition of the Big Pod Machine. See you next week.